I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back.
We're once again about to talk to Shahira Amin, who is a former deputy head of the state-run Now TV and a former contributor to CNN and a journalist in Egypt, about all the things we've got going on. We've talked to her many times over the last couple of years, and she joins us once again. Welcome, Shahira. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Shahira, you know, we're seeing...
It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you with us. I'm glad you're okay and safe, and I say that to any friends I talk to in countries, Egypt, where the turmoil is going on, because you never know what could happen from one day to the next where you are.
That's right. A lot has been happening lately, and the latest news from Cairo is that Field Marshal Sisi has announced his presidential bid, and he will run in the election. People are waiting right now. It's not like this wasn't expected. We knew this was coming, that he would actually run in the election, but he's now come public with it. And there's mixed reaction. People are yearning for a return to stability and some kind of state of normalcy in their lives. And they are hoping that once Field Marshal Sisi becomes president, then, you know, that he will be able to run the country better because, in the last few months it's been total chaos, lack of security, lack of stability. And I think things took a turn for the worse 2 weeks ago when the university protests started. And there are daily ongoing clashes between security forces and university students throughout Egypt, in universities across the nation. And every day we hear of, young people dying in the clashes, being shot dead. Also, every day, police getting killed, security personnel getting killed. So people are hoping that once we have presidential elections, then things will stabilize and get better. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Well, yeah. One of the things that when, as you were speaking, I was thinking about was that in covering and talking about this revolution that began in Tahrir Square in 2011, that there was great hope at that point. And what you're saying in some ways now is that the people's desire for security and stability and not knowing what the future is going to bring. Isn't that in part what you were talking about? We talked once before about why people said it was okay to overthrow the elected government, even if you didn't agree with that government, and that people are asking, seems like once again, at least some people, just give us the authoritarian regime. It's fine. We just want peace.
Exactly. You talk to people on the streets, taxi drivers, and they tell you that it was better pre-January 2011, that things were a lot better, that they were earning their livelihoods. Now a lot of people are jobless. Prices have soared of basic commodities. And the instability and the chaos, and some people are even afraid to leave home because you don't know what's going to happen next. You may get mugged. You may get shot. Total mayhem. So a lot of people actually tell you it was better in the Mubarak days because at least it was stable and secure then. And that's sad to hear after all the hopes. The revolutionary activists went to Tahrir because they wanted bread, freedom, social justice. And 3 years on, we're nowhere near achieving any of these goals, but now we have the added problems, terrorist attacks, not just in Sinai, but across the country. The university protests every day, clashes, people dying on the streets. And it's really very, very sad to hear the news every day, and we don't know what's going to happen next.
Well, I mean, when people in this country, at least in the United States and other places, watching the news, and they see that, well, there's several things. And I may just start with this one. They see that, 259 people were sentenced to death? Muslim Brotherhood people for
actually 529 people.
I had the numbers transposed. 529, right?
529 Muslim Brotherhood supporters sentenced to death en masse, and that's the first time this has ever happened, I think, anywhere in the world. I don't think that the death sentence will be carried out, because they will appeal. They will get a chance to appeal. But also the Mufti, who is the highest, the Islamic chief, he will decide whether to reject or approve that verdict. But I think it was meant as a threat and a very strong message to not just Muslim Brotherhood supporters, but to anyone opposing the government, any voice of dissent, that there is zero tolerance. The military-backed authorities are sending this message because, you know, first of all, they want to crush any kind of dissent, and they've made that clear, first with the crackdown on Muslim Brotherhood supporters, which has widened, targeting also secular activists. We have, you know, icons of the January 2011 revolution, symbols of the revolution, behind bars for protesting against the draconian anti-protest law. Ala Abdel Fattah was also in jail. He's been released on bail, but he will be tried. And there are several others, and journalists as well. So the military-backed authorities are silencing any kind of dissent. They've made that message very, very clear. And now we have this really absurd and grave injustice, this verdict. Some of the Muslim Brotherhood supporters are calling it a death sentence of the judicial system in Egypt, because now I think a lot of people have very little faith in the independence of the judiciary. It's clear that the courts are being used to settle political scores, and also I think the judge who handed out that sentence was actually trying to appease the military backed authorities, you know, to say that, and it really tarnishes the image of the judiciary in Egypt very badly.
I mean, when you have, and let me point out here in our conversation, people have not heard us speak before with Shahira Amin. I mean, Shahira is not a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, you're talking from a very, very different perspective. I think it's important to point that out. And when you have activists, you mentioned Ala Abda El Fattah, who is now out, but was one of at least 16,000 political dissidents who were in Egyptian jails coming out. And he wrote this the other week. He said, "Everyone knows that most of those who are in jail are young, and that oppression is targeting an entire generation to subjugate it to a regime that understands how to separate it from them, and that does not want to and cannot in any case accommodate or include them." I mean, this is because originally, I mean, I remember when the army moved against the Muslim Brotherhood in the beginning and throughout Morsi's government, that there were a lot of more secular people and liberals who supported that at the moment. And now I guess they're living to regret on
initially,
some levels.
Initially, yes. Initially, they wanted to give the Muslim Brotherhood a chance, but very quickly they turned against the Muslim Brotherhood when they, you know, shoved this constitution, the Islamist dominated constitution down people's throats, basically. And when President Morsi passed that presidential decree giving himself absolute powers, a lot of the young revolutionaries turned against him then. And a lot of them were in Tahrir Square on the 30th of June demanding his downfall. But very quickly, they became very disappointed with what came after because of the repressive atmosphere, because of the rights violations. We now have a return of the virginity tests. Some female detainees actually spoke out and said that they had been subjected to virginity tests.
Wow.
Again, even though we have a court ruling that was passed 2 years ago saying that this would never happen in Egypt again. So the return of the virginity tests, police brutality that we see every day on our TV screens, and we're hearing allegations of prison torture from testimonies from the detainees themselves and their defense lawyers, and journalists being put behind bars, some getting shot while covering the protests. The three Al Jazeera journalists who have been accused of being terrorists or aiding terrorists and tarnishing the country's image, they were just doing their work, and they've repeatedly denied the accusations, saying they have no links with the Muslim Brotherhood. So all of this, we find the opposition movement in Egypt growing slowly but surely. A lot of the young people, liberal, secular activists, and now, you know, also disengaged, not just disengaged, but, you know, they stayed away from the constitutional referendum. And that sent a very strong message that, you know, that they're very disappointed, their hopes have been dashed, and, you know, a lot of them have joined the opposition.
So, with the Muslim Brotherhood being a plurality for whatever, I don't know what the exact number is, of people in Egypt in terms of sympathies, and you have maybe an equal number of people who can span a spectrum from being liberally religious to secular who look at Egypt in a different way. You have these two kind of very different forces, and but where does all the support for Sisi come from then? It's not coming from the Muslim Brotherhood, and it's not coming from the liberal sector. Where's it coming from?
Coming from, I would say, middle-income classes, but also upper, from the upper echelons of society, people who are tired and who want to get on with their life. You know, there are the Mubarak loyalists who were against the revolution from day one. They've come out very strongly in support of Sisi. The Christians who were terrified of the Muslim Brotherhood, and, you know, they would rather have any other option than an Islamist government. And also the people who were very disappointed because Morsi, of course, did not deliver in any way in terms of the economy. It's in tatters. He has not, you know, kept any of his election promises. And he did not leave a mark at all. And people were terrified that he would actually alter the identity of the country. Egypt has always been a moderate country. There were a lot of sectarian clashes, attacks on churches. So people were very worried. And a lot of people are happy to see the back of this Islamist regime. But now, because of the repression, we have a third movement, young people who say, we don't want the Muslim Brotherhood, but we don't want a return to military rule. And it's not just these young people, but also members of the Dastur, the party formed by Al-Baradei, the reform leader.
Who's in exile, right?
They have been forming, yes, they've been forming human chains on bridges, you know, saying that we cannot welcome back the military with open arms. But of course, the military was never gone anyway. They've always been there. Even with the Islamist government, they were there pulling the strings from behind. Now they're just coming back up front again.
So what you're describing is something we don't see in the news anymore. I mean, when people were in Tahrir Square, we saw that all the time because there were tens of thousands of people in the square calling for the end of Mubarak, calling for a new Egypt, a democratic Egypt, an inclusive Egypt. But what these demonstrations are not things we're seeing. I mean, we're reading about the oppression. We're reading about the trial of the Muslim Brotherhood and 529 people being sentenced to death. But these demonstrations and protests and the kind of liberal sector standing up and saying no is something we're not seeing very much of in the Western press. And you're saying this is happening
because it's still a very small movement.
Uh-huh.
Very small movement, Mark. It's growing every day, but it is still, you know, we still have the masses coming out in support of Sisi, and that's because of the media, which has been towing the state line, not just state media, but also state-influenced media. You hear very, very few journalists actually reporting what is going on because the military-backed government has made it very clear that, you know, you can only give one side of the story. If you give both sides of the story, if you tell the other side, the Muslim Brotherhood side, then you're immediately labeled a fifth column, a traitor, and you get accused of being one of the Muslim Brotherhood, which has now been designated as a terrorist organization. So very risky for journalists right now. And it's the messages being disseminated in the media that have people cheering on the military and glorifying, lionizing Field Marshal Sisi. Now, I think there are very, very high expectations of him. And once he does become president, I think people will then see whether he can really bring about the change that they want to see. So far, we have a progressive constitution, but it hasn't been respected. A lot of very good things in that constitution, but when we look at what's happening on the ground, the freedoms that are ingrained in this constitution, we don't see any of that happening. So he came out in a speech 2 days ago and said that we will see a modern Egypt without exclusion. But when he says that, and we see thousands of Muslim Brotherhood, not just leaders, but also supporters behind bars, when we see the secular activists also languishing in jails. So, you know, I think there's a very big gap between what we hear and what is actually happening on the ground.
When you hear people, and this is people that most people wouldn't know, be up in reading articles about Egypt, people like Samir Radwan, who was a finance minister in the post Mubarak, and this woman leader of a political party who I don't know, I just read a quote from her, but her name is Hala Shukrala. They're talking about
that's right.
That they're both saying that that she's saying that like the deep changes in the psyche of the Egyptian people and youth cannot be turned back no matter what happens because something happened during that time and it keeps growing even if it's being repressed. And he was saying how the gains of liberal principles in the last few years can't be rolled back, he doesn't think. So, I mean, when I was talking about I'm curious, I mean, how you feel those sentiments are in terms of the depth of feeling in Egypt and what you think there has been this kind of shift in the psyche of the Egyptian people, at least some sectors.
I agree fully with that, Mark, and this is what gives me hope, because Egyptians had their first taste of freedom right after January 2011, when they took stake of their own country. You know, they went out on the streets, cleaning the garbage and cleaning the streets, the young people. And, you know, we actually felt it in the air, that freedom. And once you have that, you can't let go. I think that that trend is irreversible. They will continue to push for reforms. They will continue to hold their governments accountable. We saw that when the protest law was issued, you know, banning any protests without a permit from the Interior Ministry. And, you know, the youth went out on the streets protesting because they had found their voice and they're not going to be silent anymore. And when the repression, because of the crackdown, a lot of them are using social media again. They're on Twitter, on Facebook, you know, sharing their thoughts and engaging in lively debates. And I know that, you know, that they say that they will not go back and that the ball has started rolling and there's no stopping it, really.
Well, this has been very enlightening. I mean, I think that it's important to hear the voices as yours come out and say what's going on. But, I mean, again, I worry about doing these things. I worry about your safety and the safety of any journalist who speaks up, because none of you know at any time what could happen. You could become one of the 16,000 political prisoners that exist now overnight. Not that I want to be a pessimist about
Shahira. That's true. It's a very, very dangerous atmosphere. The Committee for the Protection of Journalists has ranked Egypt among the top three most dangerous countries, right after Syria and Iraq, which are conflict zones. So Egypt is very dangerous for journalists. It's also among the top 10 jailers of journalists in the world. I believe that right now we have at least 10 journalists behind bars, including the Al Jazeera journalists. Mossab Eshami has been in prison since August. He's now on hunger strike. He was a cameraman for Al Jazeera, and all he was doing was, you know, just doing his job. And he's not in the Marriott cell case with the others, but he doesn't even know what his crime is. So it is very risky, and it's not just the government that's doing that. It's mobs on the streets that attack you, accuse you of working for Al Jazeera, which a lot of Egyptians perceive as being pro-Muslim Brotherhood. So it's really this very deep polarization in the society that's causing this. A lot of mistrust, a lot of hatred, a lot of incitement to hatred and violence, one group against the other. Very, very sad to see, because we were all united in Tahrir in January 2011. But the sad thing is that we were united against Mubarak, but we were not, you know, united in our ideologies, in our goals. And right after the revolution, of course, there was no plan, no organization, and that is why we seem to have lost. The revolution has been hijacked twice. Once by the Muslim Brotherhood, now by the military again.
And there's no really hope from the outside, because the American policy is not going to change. They're going to do nothing to destabilize whatever government's in Egypt. And so, I mean, it'll be all, whatever happens in Egypt is going to have to be coming out of an internal struggle for the revolution that you all started in 2011.
I think America has given up on Egypt. It's not as interested in Egypt and the region as it was. But I would ask, I would really urge Americans not to turn their back on Egypt, because I think that sometimes, of course, we do very badly need the international support and backing, but not just that. When journalists went out across the globe expressing solidarity with the jailed Al Jazeera journalists, there was actually improvement in their prison conditions for these journalists. So I think Egypt needs you. Egypt needs the world. Please don't turn your back on us. If at least just to get the news out, to tell people what's happening, as you're doing, Mark, that's great. And but it has to be the Egyptians themselves, really, who have to continue to push for reforms and to keep the momentum that started back in January 2011.
And Shahira Amin, we will be here to have your voice and others on this airwaves to let the people here know what's going on and stay on top of this and stay with you. Shahira Amin, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Please stay safe, and we will stay in close touch.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. Or you can go to SteinerShow.org and click on the Maryland State Education Association's banner.